And we're live.
Welcome to episode 7 of WP Dev Table, and we're talking about the business side of plugin development. And we've got a very special guest, Matt Medeiros. And joining me as usual is my co-host, Jason Resnick. If this is your first time to WP Dev Table, you can go to wpdevtable.com and subscribe to us via iTunes, RSS. You can subscribe to us on YouTube, however you like, and there's also an email and mailing list there if you'd like to keep up with the episodes. As I said, Jason, my co-host, is with me, and I'll let Jason introduce himself. Jason.
How's it going, everybody? I'm Jason Resnick, independent WordPress developer and consultant, basically helping designers and agencies achieve any sort of success through their projects by developing their designs into functional websites. I also released WP Field Guides about 2 weeks ago, which is basically an insight into the strategies behind WordPress development for designers, agencies, and freelancers. They come in forms of downloadable content at the moment, but there's going to be videos, webinars, and one-on-one sessions as well. Bronson?
Cool. Yeah, so my name's Bronson. I'm a Brisbane-based WordPress developer. I work at a company called Sensor, and we do corporate bespoke design and development, only using WordPress. Joining us is our very special guest, Matt Medeiros, who basically needs no introduction, but I'm going to make him do it himself. So, Matt, over to you.
Trust me, I need an introduction. My name is Matt Medeiros, co-founder of Slocum Studio. I do a podcast called The Matt Report. And do a lot of stuff around WordPress and helping businesses get online using WordPress, marketing their sites. We do themes, we do plugins, and I do too much. And I'm sure we'll talk about some of that stuff today.
Awesome.
Cool. Do you want to kick it off, Jason?
Sure. Well, many of you are probably wondering why we got a business guy on the development.
I hope you don't lose like your viewership because of this.
Yeah, let's hope not. But no, I mean, Matt has an IT background, and at least if you are an avid listener of the Matt Report, he's mentioned it several times. But if you can kind of just maybe just give a little bit of a brief synopsis of your IT background.
Sure. I think my first computer was. If I can recall back, I think it was like a Tandem Sperry or something like that. I don't know. It was really old way back in the day, and it was just DOS. And I remember just being very curious about how technology works. And my father actually had one of the very first what you would consider laptops, right? So it was this huge box, and it had a big handle on it, and it looked like a tool, like a toolbox, right? And it had like a 7-inch CRT monitor on it. The entire full-size keyboard like stuck to the front of it. It's quite awesome. So it started all the way back then, like trying to get DOS games to run and just like hacking the command line back then. Then I went to school for it. I was much more interested in the networking side of things. So I did a networking degree at a local college. And that's where we learned a lot about, or I learned a lot about Linux. Building the application layer of servers and hosting, and I got a job at a local ISP, internet service provider. I started out from tech support, worked my way up to the lead product guy at that company, and I was back then. I was one of the first ones to bring in shared hosting, as it's known today, like cPanel, shared mail servers and stuff like that. Back then, they didn't have that. It was sort of just all like Windows NT stuff. So I was able to bring them a lot in the open source stack, be it Linux and cPanel and Apache and just Linux hosting. Grew that for a while, and then got out of that and spun up our agency about 6 or 7 years ago. Wow. So I do have that sort of that technical background in the ISP space. So a lot of my coding stopped from way back then, but it was just like bash scripting and the understanding of PHP, but I certainly didn't do it day-to-day, and then HTML and CSS, stuff like that. I think when I first got into WordPress, it was out of the necessity of acquiring another ISP in our area, and they had a Drupal web development shop. And we took them over And they were like, well, the only guy that knows anything about CMS is Matt, because we know that we can install this stuff on cPanel. So I was charged to lead that arm of the company. And the Drupal stuff back then was like version 5. And we were just like, what the hell is this? This isn't going to scale. And even the developers that were using it, they were like, this is like Drupal 5 is terrible. And I think like 6 was on the horizon. So we were looking at it saying, well, maybe we'll just start building everything in beta 6. And the designer there, who I'm still fairly good friends with, he's a freelancer now, but he was like, we should really look at WordPress. And we did the research back then, and the first premium theme we bought was Standard by John Saddington, and eventually 8-bit. And that was my first foray into working with WordPress and premium themes and stuff like that.
Cool.
Awesome. It's a really good background. So with your agency, when did you start that? Are you based, do you have a business location, or are you doing that things remotely? And how does your business work?
Yeah, sure. So I think a lot of the folks that are listening to this might be interested in how we sort of run the agency and the idea behind it. So if you do listen to my show, you probably know that I have a background in car sales. My grandfather started a car dealership 60 years ago, started selling tires to other dealerships and garages, you know, back when you could actually sell tires and like go door to door to sell tires. So we were one of the first Mazda dealerships in the United States way back when. My father and his brothers, my uncles ran it. We sold a dealership, well, 8 years ago now, about 3 or 4 years before GM went bankrupt. We ended up being a Chevy and a Cadillac dealership for the last like 20 years of business. So when my father got out of that, I was doing the thing at the ISP, and he was always into photography, and he started getting clients saying, you know, hey, you took some great photos, but we need a website to go with this. Like I said, I had started touching WordPress and getting into that, and he just said, hey, I'm getting a lot of clients asking me to build sites for them. At that point, the company I was working for, we ended up getting rid of the web design side of it because we couldn't do it anymore, and it wasn't our core focus. So I talked to the owners. I'm like, hey, I might be spinning up a company with my pops. What do you guys think about it? And they were cool with it, so I did it. We started. He had his studio where we exist now, which is an old school building, not an old school building, an old school building. People tend to get confused with that. And my grandfather actually attended school there, which is really cool. So it's still it's a family business, but it's even got some legacy behind it, so that's pretty cool. So we do have a studio where the guys at work in the studio come to every day, and we show up there every day. It's great for culture, but it's also great for the local businesses that we do business with. A lot of it is predicated to the car dealership, where the delivery and the experience, like selling cars and walking around, and we were always a family dealership. We weren't like a high-pressured, massive volume car dealership. So we would like introduce people to the parts department, the service department, the receptionist. I mean, they were people that were working for us like 20, 30 years that were at the dealership. So it was very much like family. So we'd taken that same kind of experience where we get to walk them around and the customer gets to see sort of what's happening behind the scenes. You're a real company. You have some costs here because you have a place. there's coffee, water, snacks. You know, we try to treat everybody with a nice high-end experience, and they get to see all of the developers going to town, and they see all of our media equipment, and it just a different feel. And it sort of just gives them a taste of, hey, this is I'm working with a real agency. So, one, get ready to experience a higher price, but two, the experience and the support is going to be a little bit better.
Nice. That's cool. So when you did you immediately jump into the theme game, or was that kind of like on the back end of doing client work, or what was the decision there, I guess?
Yeah, so I was a 37 Signals fanboy, as I think a lot of us are or were at least back then. And you know, I was really looking at wanting to build a product, and it probably even started before really getting into like 37 signals and rework and all the books that they were putting out. But it was certainly fueled by that a little bit. And I just knew that, one, we knew that we didn't want to have just one revenue channel. We didn't want to just rely on client services because, as we all know, it's cash flow. It's finding the projects. There's, you know, it takes man hours and the deliverables take time. So we knew that we wanted to have another arm, another revenue, and we started looking at the way 37 Signals was doing it, and they were like taking all their experiences and putting it into books, scratching their own itch and turning it into a product. I think back then is when they had Haystack, I think was the name of it, which was like a directory of web designers and web developers that used 37 Signals products. Right. So it was sort of like that whole like full circle thing. You know, we were like, well, look, we're building out themes, we're building out WordPress stuff. Themes back then were like on fire, right? And people were selling themes left and right. And that was really a good time for us, like 2007, early 2008. And so we were like, well, let's take the residual of the work that we do and turn it into a product. The first iteration of that experience massively failed. So it was very different. It was like we really very much had that mentality well, if we build it, they'll come, right? And we'll put out themes, and everybody else is selling themes, and they're having a grand old time with it. Well, we will too. Our team back then wasn't set up for product business, right? So we're very much in a flux state where they were working on client stuff, deliverables, and then sort of like 20% of the time working on themes. So we weren't really putting a whole heck of a lot of effort into it, into the product itself, and certainly not marketing it. We would just throw it up on the site, and we're like, well, hopefully people will come. And people did come. I mean, a few of them came, right? We launched with like a basic blog theme, a legal theme, and that was it. And the legal theme sold because back then just the keywords and people were finding it on Google was so easy, and it did fairly well, and it kept us going. So that was that, and it was going really well. It was going fairly okay. And then our second iteration of themes, Slocum Themes, took a whole different direction. That does really well now. But our approach to that was putting it into WordPress.org and the freemium model, and we can talk about that if you want.
Cool. Yeah, that was going to be one of our questions, why you went your own way rather than a marketplace.
Yeah, and really I should sidestep. I had a theme, I had a Drupal theme that I used to sell. This also was the sort of the genesis behind doing our themes, because before we started the agency, I was actually selling a Drupal theme that I had made. I can't say the name of it because the domain is not really legal in terms of copyright. In terms of copyright, not in like illegal, like this breaks the law kind of thing, or would put me behind bars. But I did that, and I did really well with that, right? And I ended up selling that site on Flippa and getting out of it because of the copyright stuff and the naming of it, and I just got out of it, and it still exists. So selling a specific Drupal theme, I was like, wow, this is amazing, right? And I did very little for that. Like, I did very little marketing, very little SEO, because I really didn't know it back then. So that's what sort of caused me to say, well, look how easy it is over here. WordPress is so popular. Let's do it with this, too, and I'll get the same kind of revenue. So then we did that, didn't work that well. The second iteration, because I've been a lot more involved with the community and doing more marketing stuff, more podcasting stuff, the freemium model and entering into WordPress.org just made a whole heck of a lot more sense for the themes. It was very tough and still is tough to just put it up behind a paywall and say, or put it on a marketplace and then share that revenue because there's very little revenue at the end of the day. And look, we're not doing trendy, and I have no problem admitting this. Like, there are developers and designers out there who will just follow trends. Parallax, mobile, responsive, flat UI, you know, whatever's coming next. There's the trend, the kitchen sink, like throw everything at it, right? And it works for some people, but it's not part of our workflow. Like, we very much want to take code and layouts that we can reuse from projects and then just sidestep it and pivot it over into a product because there's just a lot less R&D overhead for us. We're not creating something new. So our idea for going into .org is to just stay away from the marketplaces because they are super competitive. Just being in .org and doing the freemium model works fairly well.
So you feel that going that route with .org and even just putting yourself out there, more marketing and that kind of stuff, was the leap from the first failed theme into what you have now?
Yeah, it's very tough, right? To you really have to pay attention to your brand and what you're putting out there. So, for example, the original site, like slocumstudio.com, which is our agency site, is a very stripped-down version. It's actually too stripped-down. We'll be adding more content to that soon. But on our first launch of themes, we just had everything there. So it was our agency work. We have a video and photography sort of division that was up there. So there was just like this massive amount of content and no real one defining unique message, right? So people landed there and they were like, oh, I can buy a theme for you for $60. And then when I ask you to build a site for me, you quote me $6,000, right? So there was like this, there was this difference of, and then when we actually got referral customers coming to the site, like, our larger clients that are used to paying $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, they come to our site. They're like, these guys sell like $30 themes. Like, like, what the hell is this, right? So like, there was this whole like brand smorgasbord that was happening, and that was part of the problem. The .org free exposure on the themes, very simplistic themes, so the overhead wasn't bad. It wasn't bad for us to develop, and it's not bad for us to support it. You know, knock on wood, our support overhead isn't that bad at all. what everyone says is, oh, it's easy to sell this stuff, but wait till you get all that support overhead. You're gonna look at it differently. We don't really see it, and maybe it's because we're not at a high volume, high enough volume. But even when one of our themes got featured on WordPress.org/themes, the homepage, I mean, maybe one support request came through, and like our sales went 10x that for those 3 weeks when they were on the homepage. So, that's been our model ever since.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah, I think you've hit on a good point there, where you're talking about simplicity, and that's the thing. Like, if you keep it simple, because that's what we're used to doing for clients. It's less to maintain. It's easy to use. They understand it. Whereas if you look at the typical themes on ThemeForest and things like that, you'll have 10 sliders. There'll be 11 JavaScript libraries to maintain, and they need to be updated. It's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
Yeah. Cool. So from your themes, you're obviously delving into plugins now with your new plugin called Conductor. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how that came about?
Yeah, so it's the same essence, right? It's taking the work that we were doing with our project stuff and turning that into a product, right? So, we do a lot in the publishing space, magazines, local magazines, regional magazines. We actually have a printed product that we put out every year for our local market, so we kind of understand that market. And because of that, we get a lot of work in that space. And over and over, we were getting, as WordPress was getting easier to use, the customizer was starting to be heavily promoted, and just the general adoption of WordPress and educating our clients, they were like, hey, this stuff isn't as scary to us anymore. We want to be able to control the content and the layouts of our sites without having to call you all the time. Number one, to bother you and have those support requests, but number two, pay you to keep having you do this over and over again. So we started getting these requests a lot. It started with one of our larger clients, and he has an editorial staff, and they were like, we want to be able to move articles up and down on the homepage at will, right? So we don't want like the typical archive role or blog role where just the most recent post at the top. We want to take a featured story and put it there and leave it there until it's over, until the sponsorship is done, or if they want to move a sponsored event up and down. So we started getting that request. We started building it into a widget back then, and at a very small infancy. And then we got the same request over and over again, And we were like, you know what, let's turn it into a plugin just for ourselves, like not a product. You know, and then like we really started to see the power of it when we started using it, you know, in our pre-sales process. So a perfect example would be we started building it, Conductor, and we were like, hey, I think we can solve this with Conductor. Like the customer would come to us like, hey, we want to do this layout. Can you guys do that? And how much would it cost and how long would it take? Then we started sitting back and we're like, wow, we can really solve all this stuff pretty quickly with Conductor. Then we would show it to them. We would demo it. They'd be like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for. And then we started saying, well, look, if we're using it and we're able to leverage it for our business, I think other people might want to do it too. And we started baking it into some of our themes, some themes that we did, like Modern Business has like an early inception product of Conductor. It's called Minimize Blocks, and it was at just blocks content, blocks of content. And we were like, you know what? People are buying it in our themes. They're loving it. It's easy. Let's polish up this product and let's get it out there. And that's what it is. It's just a way to display content very easily in any kind of layout or any kind of custom layout that you want on any page. And yeah, the launch of it's been going fairly well since we launched it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us developers out there get those requests all the time, and we've always kind of tried to, I don't know, try to figure out a better solution for it, you know. So we've always tried Builder and, you know, the countless number of page builders that are out there, and just always never seems right. Like either they're tied to a theme or they're tied to a plugin or something like that, and, you know, sometimes the theme, you know, support goes away, you know, or whatever. And I know for myself, I've always tried to find that, you know, end-all solution for the clients to allow them to manage their content a little bit better, at least so they don't have to call me to move something around, you know, whether it's in the template or something like that. So, I know I've used Conductor on WP Field Guides and had pretty good success with it as far as being able to get it to do what I want it to do and get it to fit inside the theme that I'm using.
Yeah,
I'm not using one of your themes, so it's pretty good like that. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that especially number one, if you're an agency or if you're putting your client doing client services, you never want to install something that you don't feel comfortable using, right? And that's like a no-brainer. Like it makes total sense. And so we knew that we didn't want to build something that even internally, like something that we didn't want to use over and over again. So you know, that's why we say Conductor is like lightweight, and you know, it doesn't get in the way of your theme, because we want to just stay out of the way of the theme and just use this for content layout, which is good and bad, right? Because some people look at it like, oh, there's not enough options, and then it's like, well, look, we're not a complete builder, but I also think it's important, like you said, like us developers look at things and like we're solving these problems over and over again, and if you are trying to put it into a product, just be careful. And I think, let me just step back. If you're going to put it into a product, I think most people get overwhelmed by thinking about all the stuff that they have to do to productize something, where really they could solve something in a very minimal way, and launch it as a product and not have to think about putting everything in the kitchen sink into it. So I think that's important as well.
And in terms of time frames, from when you went from, I think you said minimal blocks, as you called it started as, to actual public release, what kind of time frame are you talking? How many releases did you do before you internally, you and your team went, okay, we're ready to launch, like, let's do this?
Yep, so let me just do a quick Google search here, minimize blocks. Minimize blocks hit GitHub, it says a year ago. And updated last 7 months ago. So prior to that, it was probably like another 90 days prior to that. So, you know, it's the idea sort of started over a year ago. We were sort of building the concept of it maybe a year and a half ago. Product-wise, though, we really didn't kick it into high gear until about this summer. So this past summer is when we really started to say, okay, let's turn this into a product. And that's when we started going full force in that direction. And the way I did that, and I've talked about this on a few other shows, is I just put together an advisory board of six other awesome WordPress people, told them, hey, look, here's the product I'm going to launch. Are you cool with sticking around and helping me out with any questions I might have? Some of them were sort of like, I really don't know if I want to commit to this. And then I showed them the I showed them the product, and they were like, yeah, this is something that I think I can, I'm okay with putting my name next to. That was Tom McFarland, by the way. And he, no, and then we went, and then we moved, and then we moved forward, and I just bounced some ideas, initial ideas off of them, and then we just started rolling with developing the product. And, you know, the quick story of that was we launched right before, 2 weeks before, we launched into beta 2 weeks before WordCamp New York. And I just we did a promotional round before that and launched shortly after WordCamp New York into beta, and things have been going fairly well ever since.
Now, why did you decide on getting that advisory, like, committee? I guess, like, what was the decision there? I mean, a lot of us just will make a good plugin, we'll think that it solved, you know, our clients' needs and several of our clients' needs, and like, oh, you know what? Let's commercialize this. Like,
yeah.
What was the thought process there?
Yeah, and it's exactly that. I mean, I really trust my team, and I do trust some of the stuff in my gut when I'm making the decisions. But I know that it's foolish to think that you have all the answers, and it's foolish to think that you've thought of all angles. And though we knew that it would work with our clients. And our clients used it, and we knew that we would use it internally. I just knew that I needed to have other people look at it, right? You know, for instance, like we had an iteration up there of the widget, and I forget all the exact things, but you know, we just had like this list of options, right? And Tom McFarland looked at it, and I mean, he just like tore it apart. But he was totally right, right? I mean, like we had things in there that like didn't make sense. And he's a developer, and we're developers, and he's looking at it going, this makes no sense. You should really remove these and reorganize this, because what are people going to think when you say, you know, featured image with like just a check mark next to it, right? And really starting to think about the user experience and the user interface, because we're in there like I'm going like, how do we productize this? How do we market it? Scott and the rest of the developers are looking at it going, how do we build this thing? And no one's thinking about, you know, how people are going to interact with it. So getting that second opinion is super important. And then I was reading a book called The Lean Canvas, or The Guide to the Lean Canvas. I can look it up and link it to you guys. But the idea was that, you know, small iterations and just involve people in building the product. So I knocked on doors of folks and I said, hey, I got this product, I'd love to show it to you. I ended up talking to 35 people and interviewing them. You know, most of the time was for 45 minutes to an hour, and we were just showing them the product, demoing it, and I was just looking for their reaction and just watching them and seeing how they interacted with it, see if they understood it, see if their heads were nodding. And we did that for about 45 to 60 days while we were building out the product, and just getting even more feedback and documenting every phone call that we had so that we could go back and make sure that we got it right, you know, as best as possible.
So like a focus group kind of thing.
Yeah, so like a focus group. And the best thing that I found early on, so the best thing I did in that process, right, because a lot of people might get scared of having to show people, and they're thinking, no, I got this right, no one else is going to tell me differently, and that's cool, you can have that mindset. But early on, like the first six or so people that I was talking to, we could already feel ourselves saying, someone would say, oh, it would be really cool if you did this, or it would be really cool if you added that. So we started like writing this stuff down, like, yeah, that's great, we're going to add this, we're going to add that, and we did a little bit in the beginning, and then we'd show a new version to it to the next person. But then instantly I was like, no, we can't go down this road, because now we're going to be making this product into something else for every single person that we talk to. And it's so easy to get wrapped up in that, because as a developer, when you're talking to other developers, we're all like, yeah, it'd be awesome if, you know, you could do, you know, X, Y, Z with this. And we're like, yeah, man, that'd be great. But that's not part of the essence of the product. So what I started to do was just shift the way we promoted it and the way that we pitched it. So I would change my pitch instead of the actual product, right? Because I think in the beginning we were very, even as techie as it is now, we were going in with a much heavier technical pitch. So we started dumbing it down and just trying to make it as to the point as possible on the pitch and not changing the product, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think you touched on something there that a lot of developers struggle with, and that is, like you're saying, when a developer talks to a developer or shows them what they're working on, there's one more feature, and then it just becomes this beast and never gets released. Whereas when you nail down your focus, you get focus groups, you actually work out what your product is, what you're trying to solve, and lock it down, you can actually launch. That's
right.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean I took it seriously. I'm a big fan of like Jason Calacanis and This Week in Startups and like the whole startup scene, obviously. And I took it seriously. I made a pitch deck as if I were pitching investors, and I just took it down from what the problem was that we were solving, what the problem was, what the solution was, real world examples, and then our pricing model and sort of the technical details, and then the founding team, and then I would launch into a demo. So another quick tip is if somebody really does this and really wants to go as in detail as I did, you make a pitch deck, and the problem with is like if you're like into like TechCrunch Disrupt and you watch like these product launches and pitches, it's so easy for a founder to be on stage and demo an app, because like an app is like a finished project, right? And it's there and it's visual. When you're pitching a product over Google Hangouts, like what we're doing right now, you're doing this pitch, and the person can't interact with the plugin, right? They can't interact with that WordPress site, especially when it's a plugin that has to build a site. It adds a whole layer of complexity on top of it. So in my pitch deck, because I could tell, like I would watch people at some of the sessions I would record, and I could just watch people, and they would, like I could tell they didn't understand what I was talking about when we were demoing it. So I started adding animated GIFs to each of the slides so that they could actually see it, like the piece of the function I was talking about, like changing a layout, and it would just like repeat over and over again, and they could see it. And as my pitches progressed and matured, people were getting it a whole heck of a lot faster, and I could tell people were getting more hyped up by the end of the pitch when I had those more fleshed out pitch decks. So
that's awesome. If I was Troy Dean right now, I'd say that was worth the price of admission itself.
Yeah. Yep.
So in terms of deploying releases and things like that, how do you decide when you're going to add features or iterate and like work to the next release?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. In terms of like technical stuff that we're doing, like, or what we use, obviously we use Trello to sort of track everything and keep our pipeline there. We have our wish list. We have our like definites, like definite in the next version list of what's coming up. But right now I'm just really listening to the existing clients and customers that have already purchased it, and really paying attention to what we're receiving when we do our conductor office hours on Thursdays. So for example, right now you can display with conductor, you can display any page post or custom post type or any post category, but not a taxonomy. And we've had, at this point, probably 100 or so customers for the plugin. And no one has asked us for taxonomies except for one person. So one would think that taxonomies you should probably have in core, but only one out of 100 have asked. So should we put taxonomies in there? So what we're doing right now is we're trying to solve everything in code snippets. So as if you were building a StudioPress site and you wanted to shut off StudioPress comments, I don't know if that's built into the theme options, but let's say it's not. You might go to StudioPress or Genesis, and you might grab a code snippet, and paste it into your functions file, and boom, your comments are off. You want to put comments back on, take that back out. We're trying to solve these things, these types of scenarios, that way. Before we're committing them to core. So we'll get a few requests, and if it makes sense, we'll make a snippet and release it like we did today with taxonomies. And then if we notice enough people downloading it and requesting it, then we'll put it into core. I'm really trying to pay attention to that. And for better or for worse, other add-on stuff will be solved into a plugin. So we're trying to keep the core of Conductor very light. So if you want to hack it up and do stuff with it, or you just don't want all those other features, no problem, use core. But like we're releasing a WooCommerce add-on, which will pull in all the custom fields for your WooCommerce product. We're not building that into core because not everybody's going to use WooCommerce. So you're going to use the WooCommerce add-on. Same thing with AgentPress. We have an AgentPress add-on, a different display pack for different displays. So we're trying to keep everything segmented and sort of lean and mean so that you only need your particular recipe of plugins to build a particular site.
That's really awesome. I really like that. It's quite unique because most people are going to just throw in whatever feature comes through. Oh, customers ask for it, even if it's just one. Oh, we'll add it in, whereas the approach you've taken, I like it, keep it light. And it's you can still extend it as needed. Very smart.
Yeah.
Cool. So in terms of support, I know we've talked about it for your themes. You didn't have much in the way of support there. How about Conductor? What's your support load like here compared to the themes stuff?
Same kind of scenario, and I don't think we've really hit that max capacity. I mean, it's really only been out in its full version for the last, you know, maybe 3.5, almost 4 weeks this week. So it's still it's a lot of promotional stuff and still getting people into buying the product. So support's been fine. Hasn't been anything crazy. And, you know, maybe I think the most complex thing we had was somebody didn't have, they thought they would get more display options. So out of the box, it comes with small, medium, and large, you know, blocks, and which is like 25%, 50%, and 100%. And a couple people said, well, or one person said, well, I thought you could get like a third and, you know, just more variation in sizes. So we actually created a snippet for him and just shot it over to him, and we'll see if that works. So nothing major on the support overhead in that sense. Really, it's just coming down to how do we differentiate ourselves. We do get a lot of pre-sales questions like, what makes you different than Divi or, you know, Builder or you know, those types of solutions. And again, we are trying to stay very much focused on displaying content, stuff that other plugins will not touch. And yeah, that's like the WooCommerce stuff. Eventually, we'll do Gravity Forms and comments and media. You know, and we're hoping to get into other areas of content from around the web, from your other social sites. So we'll see where that takes us.
Awesome. I'll let Jason ask the next question, seeing I've hogged a few.
Yeah, I mean, so for your support, I guess this is a little bit going off the notes here, but
sure.
For your support, I mean, are you probably have, you know, like using Help Scout or something like that that filters in the emails, but let's say there's a feature that, you know, comes through the support, are you kind of like are you using any sort of tools to tally those features so you know that they come across multiple times? Or I mean, it might even just be that you're the one that's fielding all the requests so you can see it. But, you know, is there something that you guys are using that allow you to kind of see all that?
Yeah. You hit on something else that might be kind of important. So right now, so if there are people out there that are listening to this that are sort of like the founder of the company, and maybe they're not doing all of the development, which is certainly me, I am the only one. So if you have a team and you already have a product and you're about to launch a second product, sort of like we are, right now I'm handling 99.99% of the support. Any of the pre-sale stuff, any of the support stuff, it's very important that I understand where the questions are coming from, how they're finding us, what their reactions are. I do a lot of one-on-one demonstrations. So if people want to buy this and they're like, I'm not sure of this, I will just set up a Skype call with you. I don't care how long it takes, and because I want to grab all of this information. I want to see how people are reacting and using this product. So it is very much a manual process. We have a user voice page, and I don't promote it, but I will be, where people can you know, it's their, WooCommerce uses it too. You drop in like a feature request, and then people can vote it up. You know, but for right now, it's sort of, I see the request, like this two-thirds and different sizes thing, and we throw it on a Trello board. And we will just like vote next to it, I guess, or just rank it up as we get more requests of the same. Like one that's actually leading right now is can we replicate layouts across the site? So if you created a home page and it was, you know, small block, three blocks, you know, a bunch of blocks at the bottom, can you take that same layout and paste that on another page? Yeah, we've gotten that a lot.
Export.
Yeah.
Like almost, right?
Yep. So I mean, like that was never on the roadmap. Like we were never thinking that. We never even had it on a roadmap. And already three or four people have asked for it. So potentially we will be building that next. but it's a very much manual process. But I'm also very in tune to making sure that I'm seeing everything and responding to everyone, because I just want to make sure I know exactly what it is or how it is that people see our product.
Yeah, I think that's what will be great for portability. You know, yep. Like for developers like myself, and I know, you know, Bronson too. Like we have multiple clients that all have similar things, and if I can just export something and import it into somebody else and then change that, then it saves me a half an hour or an hour. You know, it's much better that way.
Yeah. You know, and that's some of the danger of marketing the product is I always market the product in the customizer, right? Because it's like the cool thing to do. It's like you get to see the stuff happening. You know, it's good in the sense that you get to see the content, you visualize what it looks like. But it has a traditional, it's a widget, right? So it works in the widget dashboard. So like if you get really good, like after a while, and I think I talked about this on the show today, this afternoon, like once you get really good at it and you know like what layouts you're going to build, especially if you use Conductor for like pre-sale stuff or for like wireframing, then you just like hop into your dashboard or your widgets and you just build the widgets right there, and you can build like three or four of them super fast, and you know like it's done, and you don't have to be sort of in the front end like going from page to page. So it's one of those things where I'm always trying to make sure I'm pitching it the right way. It's just something that I'm very in tune to watching for.
Cool, that's awesome. Hey, I remember back in the day when I used to have to sell websites using a proprietary CMS, part of the process was getting the client in, sitting them down, and you would actually build something in their system, and then they kind of get partial ownership of, oh, that's going to be my site. Sure, it doesn't look like the site, but yeah, I could see using Conductor for that kind of stuff would be so cool.
Yeah, and you know, and it's funny because a lot of people are afraid of doing that because like, oh God, the customer's going to see how easy that was, and then you're not going to be able to charge. Well, look, I mean, if that's what you're worried about, then you are doing it wrong. I mean, because, yeah, I mean, you really, you know, start with just a base theme then. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Like, we have a theme called Epic. There's like one horizontal rule in the entire theme. Like, that's about as far as like design goes. And, you know, use that to do it because there's no styling in that theme. You know, so, you know, if that's what you're afraid of, then I don't know what to tell you.
So how have you been advertising the plugin? Obviously, you've got podcasts and things, you do guest appearance there, you do blog posts, cross posts, things like that. Do you have affiliates too? Like, what's your marketing plan, I guess, in a nutshell?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, I've been doing the podcasting stuff now on Matt Report for almost 3 years, two and a half, almost 3 years. Sort of anticipation for all of this stuff, right? For having products and for having my own audience. That is at least one thing that I recognized early on that, you know, when you go to launch a product and you have no audience, I mean, your only options are to get in front of people by just asking them to either be on a podcast or to guest blog, or you're going down the route of like pay-per-click. And, you know, if you are about to launch a product, start building that audience as soon as possible. People say, how the hell am I going to build an audience? I'm just a developer. I've got nothing to talk about. I don't start screencasting your development process, right? Show people how you're building the product. Also, 2.5-3 years ago, we started a YouTube channel for the studio. We're almost at 5,000 subscribers, and it was just reviewing other plugins, right? And that also helped for our theme business, right? So it was like, review some plugins, and oh, by the way, we have themes that you can buy. So we spent a lot of time and money. I mean, stupid amounts of time and money on building out these channels for this anticipation, right? We didn't know what we were going to sell. I mean, we knew we were going to sell themes, but we always knew we were going to get into more product. So we spent stupid time and money on building that audience so that when we launched, we'd have it ready. you know, the pre-launch process was a lot of like special use case videos, and I used lead pages only because I didn't have any time to like build a custom theme and a custom layout. And even our site now was a half-built theme that we were supposed to just use as a landing page. And we were just like, screw it, we have no time to keep building this out, so let's just launch it, turn it into a theme, and we'll roll with it. Those first 2 weeks up into New York, we did the New Yorker demo, which got good and bad reviews for saying that we're copying a website. Some designer folks took offense to that. I'm sorry, but look, that's a perfect example, right? So like, how do I build an audience? How do I make a splash? I mean, it's marketing, right? It's like sales 101. Like, you have to have a little link bait and say that you built a $300,000 website for $300, and people are like, ooh, let me click that. Let me see how you did that. And they're like, oh, damn you! You're just demoing a plugin, you know? Like, oh, I'm sorry, but drop your email in here, and we'll send you an email when it's available. So there's a little gamesmanship in that, and that's cool, and that's what you have to do, right? There's no other way around it.
That's the car salesman in me, right,
exactly. So we did that. We rolled out some videos, and we captured emails, and I think I've still told the story before, but over those 2 weeks, 140 emails captured. I sort of promoted around WordCamp New York, and then we did a demo launch on Carrie Dill's podcast and only did a 24-hour sale for that beta round. We sold 40 copies at $100 a piece. So we did $4,000 on that first day, which was just enough to prove the point that, okay, I think people want to buy this. You know, if I heard crickets, I would have shut it down and nobody would have said anything. and we would have still used it for an internal tool for our own web development process. But that validated it, and then we just buttoned it up and got it ready for launch. So my marketing campaign right now is very grassroots, it's very organic. And I'm very happy with it. It's only been 30 days, but I've got maybe almost a dozen organic blog posts already without me like telling people blog about this. You know, people took it on their own accord to either do a video about it or do a blog post about it because they used it, they saw it. Some people have written about it that haven't even touched it yet, and they're just like, I want to get this because I think it's going to be really, you know, really great. You know, I think that some people will launch pay-per-click, some people will launch with like a giveaway, and that's cool, but that's just not me. Like, I'd rather just put myself out there and say, this is the product, and try it out. Like, if you're not sold by me putting it out there, what good is a push promotion going to do for me? Like, I could give you a laptop, but are you really here for the laptop, or are you here for me? Right. Or for the product, I should say. And I could be dead wrong, right? You know? Business is an ongoing cluster mess, so I won't swear. Business is an ongoing cluster mess, and it is what it is. You make bad decisions, you make good decisions. So we'll see how it all goes, but so far it's been good.
Yeah. I mean, I know, I used it on WP Field Guides mainly as a time saver.
Right.
You know, like I didn't design a theme. I didn't develop the theme that I'm using. I'm using one of Array's themes.
Right.
And, I was just like, okay, well, the homepage is great. It looks nice. I like the way that the theme lays out, but, you know, I want to do some stuff with the content. And I was like, I got to hack up the homepage template. And then I was like, and I saw a conductor and I was like, okay, I think let me give it a go. And it was great. I mean, there was a couple of hiccups, but it was only because of me being a developer,
right.
trying to do certain things. And, you know, Scott was great on your team and helped me along and stuff like that. So, I mean, the support there was there, which is great. So, I just liked the way that it left me alone. Like,
right. It
just allowed me to do what I wanted it to do and then got out of the way. Like, I can just disable Conductor and my theme is fine. You know, I can change the theme and Conductor, the layout is still there. So it's nice.
I mean, from a business perspective, it's one of those things where it is scary for me because I know that developers get it. It's either developers will look at it and say, I am not going to use something that's pre-made on my site and just totally forget about us, and that's fine. And then there's sort of the blogger who comes in, wants to buy it, but also wants like the kitchen sink with it. And then they see that, and when they say, "Oh, you know, it's that block is just not right where I want it. You know, why can't I just move it over? And you can just add a little margin to it, right, with CSS. And then like, oh my God, I can't do that. It's like, well, I'm sorry. I mean, if you wanted to kick that over a couple pixels, I'd have to put like 400 kilobytes of JavaScript in this thing, and you're not going to get that. So I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I like it, because it is a little bit lean. You know, like it's somewhat opinionated, but not. You know what I mean? Like it allows me to. It does what it needs to do. Gets me the bare bones of where I want things. Then if I want to tweak it, I can throw CSS in my child theme, and that's fine. You know.
Right.
So it's nice like that. I like that. So I guess one of the developer-ish type questions are is what's kind of like your process, like as far as your team, like you guys use GitHub, and what kind of development deployment process, like when you guys are about to release a new release with bug fixes and features and things like that, like what's kind of like the flow and what tools do you use in order to achieve that?
Yeah. So right now for our internal stuff, we're using Bitbucket. It's just something that we've been using for a while. So that's what we use for version control and sharing code access across a team. I am very close to hiring a part-time developer to work on Conductor. I gave him a couple case or test projects to work on, and he did really good. So I'm hoping to sort of shore that up next week. So that'll be different for us, because that'll be a person who's not going to be touching other like client work. It'll be strictly Conductor. So that's going to be an interesting thing to see how I manage that process. People who work with us in client work, like I know them, I have personal relationships with them, and they're local to us. I think that's very important for me, because while the distributed model is good, it's tough for me to build the culture that way. But anyway, that's not the answer to your question. We use Slack for internal communication, which is great. I know Scott uses, of course now I'm going to forget the name of it. What's the code editor? It's like an IDE.
Sublime?
No, that's what I use.
PHP Storm.
Yeah, so he recently moved over to PHP Storm for all of his development stuff, two other contractor developers that work for us. I'm pretty sure they're on either Coda or Sublime. That's really it in a nutshell. We're just using really Bitbucket, and we push everything to. I think we have it connected through Zapier to push to Amazon to upload the files. That's where we use EDD light software licensing for themes and for the plugin. So we integrate that with pushing it to S3. And we haven't really, in terms of product, Scott's like the only one who touches that stuff. So moving forward now, when I get somebody else working on it, it'll be interesting to kind of evaluate that. Hope that answers your question.
And when you actually do the release, do you rely on your customer base checking the change log for updates, or do you actually do an email as well and say, hey, here are some new stuff that we've added?
We haven't started doing any of the email stuff. So right now we're just reliant on most people getting the update and seeing that. But we will be. So one of the things that I have to do, and actually Jason's kind of privy to this because we've talked about it before, is anybody who has the developer license, part of that is you get dropped into our beta program. So one, we're looking to build that so that's more automated, but two, what we're going to do is manually email people, probably MailChimp, and give them access to our Bitbucket, to a Bitbucket repo for the beta add-ons, right? So that you will get first access to like our WooCommerce add-on coming up. We have a user query add-on, which will display all registered users and their meta fields, metadata. And we have a content slider add-on that's coming. So we get early access to that. So in that sense, we'll really be pushing it heavily on email and then relying sort of on Bitbucket, I guess, to kind of see, you know, if the audience picks up on it, right? So we don't know what the best model method is to deliver the beta program to folks, but we're thinking that most of them are going to be developers and most of them are going to have Bitbucket access. So we're going to try our hand at that.
Cool. So you're going to rely on the developers having Bitbucket to submit issues or pull requests or any of that stuff? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think you and I talked about that before, once before. You know, we're happy. I guess we're happy. We don't know what that's gonna look like, right? So we're happy to do it in that at that capacity. So either either Bitbucket or our regular help desk. You know, I think with the internet as it is today, especially with like Zapier, it's so easy to connect all of these services together that if somebody like is creating issues in Bitbucket, I'm not really worried about it getting into our help desk because I'm pretty sure I can connect it through Zapier, and at the end of the day, like, I'm getting it all in one source anyway. So whatever makes it easier for our customers, really.
Cool. I think that's all the questions that I got for the show notes. Bronson, you have anything? I know that you were thinking about integrating something for your own, for chassis and stuff, maybe?
I'll touch on that later. Haven't had time to develop it yet. Cool. There's one question we've missed, I think. You've touched on it lightly, Matt. How do you balance the time and effort between themes, plugins, and clients? I know you mentioned office hours for a conductor at the moment.
That, my friend, is the biggest challenge. I started another sort of like mini podcast inside of Conductor, and Jason was the unlucky guest to be number one at that, called Conductor Spotlight. And literally I came up with that title like 2 seconds before I hit publish on the blog post. Absolutely zero show notes. It's just all like floating around up here in this crazy brain, and I just went and hit record. So there is no real balance. There is no real balance to it, but there is a it's just really just a gut feeling. Like, we know that we want to be a product company, but we also want to keep agency clients. So again, we're not just buying into we'll be product only and that's it. We very much understand that at any point one of these revenue streams can fall off. Themes could drop off and just vaporize out of nowhere, and plugin could just go away, and then we'd be left with nothing. Same thing with agency stuff. So we're very much focused on keeping everything going. How do we keep that all in check? Again, just like all the technical stuff, Trello, Slack, help desk, email, weekly meetings. But really, how we're pushing forward with product stuff is we're kicking off the week with Conductor first. Like, that's our baby right now. Like, that's what we really are promoting. So the whole spirit of the week is kicked off with how is Conductor doing and what are our plans with that. And then we'll go into sort of the meetings of what's going on with this client, how are we doing on this project. And keeping in check with all that stuff. So we're very much starting off spiritually with the product every week, so that we're charged up and amped up about that, because that's the most fun part of the business.
Cool. It's a good way to start Monday. It's the most fun part of the business. I like it. Yeah. Rather than leaving it to Friday.
That's right. That's cool. That is correct.
Awesome. Well, I think, that's pretty much a wrap so far. I think next up we'll be doing unit tests for our next program. Thanks so much for your time. It was really, really good. I know developers would have learned a lot during that session, especially the pitch deck. I think that was like something that will really help developers focus on their baby products, narrow it down, get a good vision, and actually be able to ship something. So that was awesome. I'll leave it to Jason to wrap up the show, I think.
True. Matt, we're... if nobody's ever heard of you before, where can they find you online to say thanks?
Sure thing. You can find me at mattreport.com. You can get a preview of the plugin over at conductorplugin.com.
Great. Bronson, where people can reach out to you?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at BronsonQuick or my business at Senza. And that's probably the best way to get in contact with me. And you, Jason?
I'm at Rez. I'm also at WP Field Guides, and you can reach me at WPFieldGuides.com as well. Just want to thanks everybody for tuning in. I know this was a long one, but there was definitely some great information here. If you want to know when our next show is or get tips from us, just go to WPDevTable.com/subscribe, and we'll send you a newsletter about it. And please remember to like, share, subscribe on iTunes or YouTube. And, of course, there'll be a post on our website about it, and you can comment in there to join in the discussion. If you're a first-time viewer, then please be sure to catch up on our past shows and get your dev on.